Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the presentation of Telenor's third quarter results, and also to the presentation of the Unitech deal in India that we announced this morning. My name is Scott Engebretsen, and I have the pleasure of guiding you through this morning's presentation. We hope that everyone has the material that we have made available. That is our two press releases this morning, the quarterly report, and a copy of the presentation to be used here any minute. All this can also be found on our website at telenor.com. You can also watch these presentations live or in recording on either the internet or on a mobile phone. And you may also send in your written questions during this transmission. And for instructions, please see our website. There will be, as usual, a Q&A session directly after the presentations here. We'll do this after both presentations have been conducted today. And the Q&A session will then cover both the Unitech deal and the quarterly results. And as usual, we'll start with questions from the audience present, then turn over to the ones participating on the phone, and finally, the possibility to do individual interviews. Our CEO, Jon Fredrik Baksaas, will first present the Unitech deal, and then our third quarter results will be presented by Baksaas and our CFO, Trond Westlie. Enough said from me. I'll leave the floor to Baksaas.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. I can see from the audience in the room that there might be some things that have taken the numbers down from previous presentations. Maybe it's the snowy weather in Oslo this morning. Well, I'm going to present to you our step-up of our activities in emerging markets, namely the Telenor entry into India. First, a disclaimer. Then the deal that we this morning have distributed is and presented is a 60% stake in Unitech Wireless. We will here inject 1,070 million US dollars into new equity in Unitech Wireless, and this will be done in multiple tranches in order to reach a 60% stake. This corresponds to an enterprise value of 1.1 billion US dollars, the way we have done our base calculation. This assumes also then a debt in Unitech Wireless of 400 million. The Telenor entry into Unitech gives us strategic operational control from day one. There will be 7 seats at the board, of which Telenor will announce 4 and Unitech will announce 3. And we do expect the closing to take place later this year. Unitech Wireless, what is that? This is a company that was founded in 2007 by the second largest real estate group in India. It's a greenfield mobile operator with a pan-Indian license, and for the time being having spectrum in 13 circles. It's so that India is divided into circles. There is two ways of getting into spectrum and licenses in India. There is a license process, and then there is a spectrum process. There are spectrum to be received, we anticipate, in 9 circles, and that is expected to happen in the next 12 months. There is a team of close to 250 people in place in Unitech, people coming from Unitech Wireless, sorry. This is people coming from industry players in India, both from the IT side and from the mobile side. These are executives with significant telecom operating experiences, probably also expenses for that matter, But experiences when it comes to rollout, because some of these are coming from the existing operators. This is another step up all our activities in a growing market environment. And it does add new volumes to Telenor in the years to come. It is a very strong fit with what we have communicated before as our strategic agenda, namely that of expansion into countries that have future growth to offer. This is a unique opportunity, despite the fact that there are plenty of operators present in India already. There are huge numbers of people that will get connectivity in the years to come in India. I'll show you that later. And we will, of course, leverage all we have of experiences from the rest of our operation. This is in the midst of what we have been doing in Telenor for the last 10 to 12 years. It's in the midst of what we have been successful doing in other markets. And it fills in new footprint, basically, to the existing business model of Telenor. And we believe it's an attractive business case longer term. Building on the industrial rationale of Telenor, in the 90s, we started to move Telenor into international mobile operation. We did, as you know, early on, Hungary as the first one, we did Russia, we did Ukraine, and we did a number of others. At that point in time, the subscriber growth was sort of the initial steps of this industry. Roll out network, get customer base. Some years later, 2004, some of these operations move up the growth curve, and they do show revenue generation. But still, in most settings, many of our operations have been highly in need of cash when it comes to doing the network rollout and building the network effect among the new user groups. In 2008, many of our operations have moved into the cash flow generation phase of their operations. And seeing Thailand, Bangladesh being primarily revenue generating for the time being, but we only see Pakistan being sort of on the subscriber growth level, requiring cash flow in order to further build its position in the market. India will complement this. India will come in and fill in what we basically have been doing along the S-curve development of building customer bases and networks in these countries in a new way. And of course, it's not a country. It's a continent because of the sheer size of India and the fact that India also is one of those areas in the world where the economic growth is perceived to be the strongest in the years to come. If we look at the figures that Telenor has produced over the years, here comparing 2007 up against 1998, which was my starting point in my previous slide, there is a phenomenal growth in the number of subscribers, having reached 143 at the end of 2007, now 159 million as we report them in third quarter this year. And revenues building accordingly from around 30 billion to 105, and of course the operational cash flow moving from a pretty insignificant figure in 1998 to a very significant figure towards 2007. So this has created another Telenor over the years, and there has been value creation along this curve. Difficult to say though in these times when there are sort of a very rainy weather over the stock markets for the time being, but still the longer term perspective of this, we are in strong belief of that. If we look back to the Capital Markets Day in 2007, we have this slide as part of our presentation. We were seeking growth opportunities in Telenor to move from where we were
on our existing operations in that presentation.
Populations of significance, looking for regional clusters where we can leverage regional presence. Reasonable, we could wish a very reasonable, predictable regulatory environment.
The cultural fit, is it so that our business culture can fit with others?
And the quality of the business case. These were our criteria when we went through them in 2007. And we have consistently stick to that strategic agenda on how we have been looking for opportunities over the years.
You believe India falls in this description very neatly.
Here are some facts. 1.2 billion people rising. There are 28 states, which is redistributed into 22 circles from a telecom operating point of view, each with population from 500,000 to 166 million, countries of size. Hindu is the main religion. This is an English-speaking, extensively used in all administrative and business communications. And there is a stability on the political side compared to many other countries that we are working in. And the politics have managed to take transitions in continuity from face to face. The legal situation in India is very much mature because the British legal system is implanted at the fundament in the court systems. This is a large and a growing economy, and I won't be too long on this one. We can, of course, discuss whether the economic growth will be 6 to 8%, 5 to 7, or 7 to 9. The true fact is that India has been one of those countries that has produced the highest real economic growth for many years, and we believe that India will continue to be among those countries producing economic growth above many other countries. This is where we are positioning Telenor in this respect. We want to be part of that development. We want to contribute to that development. And hopefully we will also be beneficiary on the long-term industrial possibility for Telenor in this project. The economic growth figures, as I referred to, is taking a dip in these years. Question mark is, what kind of a hit will the Indian economy get from the international crisis? And the economic growth forecast for 2009 have by Economist Intelligence Unit and others been taking down to 6.8%. My point being, we're not so focusing whether it is 6.8 or 5.8, but we do believe that under most circumstances, the Indian economy will be one of those economies that really are showing growth compared to many others. And the sheer size of it is what we're looking for to participate in. Because the mobile penetration in India is low. Recorded, as we speak, at 26%. And if we compare to the other Asian countries, it's quite obvious that India is going to climb that statistic significantly in the years to come. Pakistan, for example, is here rated as with 54%, and we have been in the midst of taking Pakistan from below 20% penetration to above 50% penetration. And we have been successful in that rollout. And we have been able to have an impact in a competitive market, building market share, having reached the number two position in that market over only 4 years of operation. So we do believe in our ability to replicate the experiences earned in a country like Pakistan, also for our activities in India. And we're going to do this together with our partner, who has the local knowledge, who has the, the cultural sensibilities that we need in order to make an impact and make a visibility among all the other players. fixed line penetration and broadband penetration is insignificant. This is a city phenomenon. This will be part of future modern communications, of course, in some way or another. But when we embark on the Indian project, as I say, this is the voice model. Voice is a net and easy internet access, which will be the number one priority the first years. Then, at a later stage, we will have to discuss the broadband opportunity also in this country, which will be as important further down the line as it is in any other economy. The regulatory framework in India is very detailed, very visible, and you can find your way through it. There are 22 telecom circles. These are categorized in metro circle A, B, and C. Out of an anticipation of GDP production in these areas. So there are different spectrum fee structures available for the different circles. There is a base spectrum allocation, and from there on you have to show customer base to get new spectrum. The regulator is strongly encouraging into infrastructure sharing. And this is one of the key elements in our entry into Unity Wireless. And I will come back to that in a few seconds. The 3G has not yet been distributed, but it's anticipated that 3G will be distributed in an auction-like process next year. Our own ambitions on 3G is, of course, very important in all our other markets. But as for India, we do now have spectrum for the 900 band, and we are at the voice model in the first steps of this project. Who are then our competitors? India is perceived to be a very competitive marketplace. Yes, we know that. We have seen that ourselves through this phase since we started to look at India. There are three nationwide operators. There are two operators with TDMA, both of them expecting to take their customer basis in the direction of GSM longer term. We believe that our value proposition in this marketplace is the ability to differentiate our service offering. We have a distribution model in the other countries in Asia and in Europe, Ukraine in particular, which we will replicate, and we do hope that this is as efficient in this market as it is in the other countries in Asia. And we do execute a network quality program in the same way as we've done in all other markets. We try to build a perception that the quality of network is the best with Telenor. Then we're back to the leveraging of the Telenor business model. Using the local drive when it comes to understanding the local marketplace. Remember, India is not one market, it's several markets. And we have a lot of experience on how to balance the group leverage, the scale of economies when it comes to purchasing and concept building and product development, up against local drive when it comes to distribution, sales and marketing. The competence and the experience that we have in Telenor will of course be utilized in full, not solely relied on Telenor personnel of course, but try to escalate the capacities that we already have in Telenor into India, into a new continent for Telenor. The concept when it comes to go-to-market will, of course, be part of this, as will the governance and the principles of the group, how we operate. Not to mention the HSSE kind of challenge that we were met with in Bangladesh previously this year. We will, as I said, appoint 4 out of 7 directors to the board. We will also nominate managing director, the CFO, and the chief marketing officer. Whereas the rest of the management will be appointed by the managing director in consultation with the board of directors. And it is our head of Asia, Sigve Brekke, who will head the project work on this entry into India in the first phases. We expect the service launch mid-2009, and we have, as part of this agreement, a condition precedent on the fact that we will enter into a site and power sharing contract with power vendors in India. The Indian continent already has the principle of power sharing in place with other operators. And Unitech Wireless has been negotiating the real possibility of entering into such a power sharing model. This is a very significant move for us because it takes down the CapEx figures significantly when it comes to build coverage as it increases the speed of rollout. So it's a very key to how we approach and move into the Indian market. It's a bit different from what we're used to because we have normally built all other towers and done the site acquisition ourselves. In this case, this job has been done. We do foresee a 2 billion CapEx the first 3 years in the network rollout plan. We're looking for EBITDA break-even in approximately 3 years from launch, pretty much the same as was done in Pakistan. And the longer-term ambitions here is to compete for an 8% market share, a 30% EBITDA margin, and a 20% operating cash flow in the longer-term perspective. And then we're talking 8, 10 to 12 years ahead. We know what it takes to do a long-term project in Telenor. We've always been industrial in our approach, building sustainable positions in the markets in which we move. This is another project in that direction. We are long-term in positioning Telenor. We have been so, and this relates to this project as well. The funding question is, of course, very important in these days. How can this be done? We have come to the conclusion that we will do an equity injection in Unitech Wireless, and it will be, in the short term, funded by existing facilities or commercial papers. Then we intend to secure additional long-term funding by raising approximately 12 billion Norwegian crowns through a rights issue early next year. In this sense, the Norwegian government has stated this morning its willingness, under certain conditions, to put forward a parliamentary proposition to participate for its pro rata share of such a rights issue. This will then be the longer term foundation for how Telenor will approach the business opportunity in India. This will of course give us some impact in the figures both short term and long term. CapEx to sales ratios in 2009 and 2010 will of course grow high from low 20s to high 20s. The operating cash flow will be diluted in 2009 by 90% estimated, and in 2010 by 40%. Other things being equal. It's been very important for us to also be very clear on the fact that our existing dividend policy will remain unchanged. Concluding then, we do think India is a unique opportunity to take Telenor further into its development in the international mobile markets. We know India is a significant, challenging marketplace. We do think we have the capabilities and the capacities in Telenor to handle this. It will give us a solid contribution to the growth profile on Telenor in the years to come, and further strengthening the industrial development of the group in such a sense that we will maintain and build our scaled economy capabilities versus other players in this industry. We will, of course, leverage whatever confidences that we do have. I'm very happy to recognize that many managers in Telenor this morning, basically, has offered their interest through this message to me and to Bjørn in order to participate in this. So there is a willingness among our managers to really participate in building Telenor into this next stage. And we believe that we can handle the business case and move it into an attractive development over the long-term perspectives on this project. This will not be sort of the immediate figures to come through in fourth quarter 2008, but we solidly believe that this will contribute in the longer term industrial profile of Telenor in the years to come. That takes me through the Indian entry of Telenor. And I will then move over to the financial figures as of the third quarter 2008. And if I'm right here, there is even a longer disclaimer entering the figures. Assuming everyone you have read this one, I move to the figures. There is a stable performance in Telenor third quarter 2008. I'm happy to report. The growth in number of customers continues, 6 million this quarter. And again, it's the Asian countries that primarily contributes to the big figures here. But even in the Nordic countries, there are some customer additions to count in. The organic growth figure of Telenor is now 4%, which is lower than what it was in the first and second quarter, which we had 6-7%. So we are also seeing effects of the new and more challenging economic climate in our markets. However, I do have to say that this quarter, believe it or not, is the very best quarter that we ever have produced in Telenor, reaching 10.033 billion Norwegian crowns at the adjusted EBITDA level. Our previous figure for that was 9.5 billion last year. And third quarter 2006, which was considered the very, very, very best quarter ever in Telenor, was 9.2 billion. So, looking at the growth profile of Telenor, having positioned Telenor in the growth environment, growth countries, we are producing financial growth in our figures also in this quarter. We do see, though, a more turbulent business environment in many of our operations. That's unavoidable. But we do believe that the telecom services is a kind of service, a kind of product, a kind of need, which is a bit different from other consumer goods. We do maintain our 208 guiding, which we did for after second quarter reporting. We will maintain those figures, and Trond will go through them in a little while. In this presentation, I will concentrate more in summary on a regional level. The retail growth in Norway for Telenor is 3% in Norway for mobile services. However, on a reported basis, it's going down 5% because of the effects of the Tele2 wholesale agreement. This is the last quarter where we have the effects of this in our figures. And next quarter, we will have the benefit of having a similar contract with Nestor Norway. So fourth quarter will be the first quarter where the Network Norway contract will have full effect for Telenor. I'm happy to say that the customer base is growing, and in particular on mobile broadband. We have added more than 40,000 new mobile broadband users in this period. No wonder, you could say, because it's a summer holiday and people are more mobile. And yes, that's right. On the other hand, we've seen a leveling out of our new ADSL number of customers in this quarter. In Sweden, we've done a restructuring in order to make a better balance between capacities and the competitive situation. There is a charge of 78 million Norwegian kroner attached to that in our reported figures on this in this quarter. But we also see that the Swedish operation is a bit more strong on customer acquisition, as it has been able to add 60,000 all in all, out of which 32,000 have been mobile broadband users in this quarter. In Denmark, we see results coming out from the acquisition of the Tele2 customer base, building and securing the EBITDA margin reasonably well. What's particularly strong, but not part of these figures in the Nordic areas for this quarter, is that the broadcast business area has grown revenue-wise by 15% in this quarter alone. So basically, the broadcast business area is doing very well, seeing growth in the main growth coming from transmission services and encryption services from Onax, which could work. We also see a strong growth in internet users of the cable this quarter from Canal Digital, which proves that the cable concept is very competitive in the Norwegian marketplace for the time being. Moving into CEE, I have to say to Mr. Tugesen and the CEOs in this area that third quarter 2008 is a very, very strong quarter. In particular in Kyivstar, we see figures of high quality. This is the third quarter that Kyivstar basically produced a EBITDA margin above 60%. And we do constantly get the question, for how long can that last? We haven't promised you that for the whole year, but still we are at this level, even in the third quarter. And Kyivstar maintained its market position also very strongly. But both Serbia and Panem is doing very well in their competitive markets, building good financial figures in their third quarter report this year. In Asia, though, we do see a more weak macroeconomic environment. However, I will say that if you look at Bangladesh, it seems like Bangladesh has been through very turbulent times and recovering to a certain extent, if we look at the Grameenphone figures, the way they are presented in this quarter. And I'm happy to say and to see that Anders Jensen and their team has managed to balance their service offering up against competition, maintaining market share both for customers and revenues, and being able to handle this competitive situation under difficult market conditions. We are now looking for an IPO to happen for Grameenphone at the end of the year. We believe this will create a stronger awareness of Grameenphone in the Bangladeshi economy. And we are also very much looking forward to the election taking place, hopefully seeing a new economic environment longer term. Digi and DTAC has delivered their figures earlier this week. Digi reasonably stable. Some consequences of the economic crisis in Thailand. If we take a look at Pakistan, we have the weakest development according to what we could expect. The third quarter in Pakistan has been basically a halt in both usage and new customers coming into the scene. And of course, this relates back to the situation that the country is in. The accident and the Marriott event, of course, plays a role in this, and foreign direct investments have taken a hold in the country. This morning, unfortunately, we had the report that it was an earthquake in Quetta area, which have had not the same magnitude as the earthquake some 2 years ago. However, the country is struggling on many fronts at the same time. We do hope that the new political direction will be set for Pakistan and that investments can start to pull through again. But we might not prepare ourselves that it takes some time. Though we see that the traffic volumes are picking up a bit in October, maybe the economy at large, in a way, managed to balance off how they use their funds under this new situation. To conclude then, my presentation on third quarter this year, we do believe that the telecom industry is a bit more resilient to the economic difficulties that many countries are facing. We're not immune, but we do believe that we can balance both OPEX and also CAPEX in reasonable terms according to what we see of customer growth and volume growth in the marketplaces. So both CAPEX and OPEX has to be put up in balance with market development in general terms. That's the way Telenor will execute in the period to come. We are long-term in building a sustainable industrial position in the markets we are. We have shown that in all our markets and continue to do that. And to conclude again, we maintain also under the circumstances that Unitech will be part of Telenor from now on. We will maintain the dividend policy unchanged. That concludes my presentation this morning here from Fornebu. And Trond Vestli will take us through the financial figures of third quarter 2008.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'll go guide you through the numbers for the group numbers for the third quarter. I'll do this briefly. The number, as Freddy said, is the all-time high revenue and EBITDA. We're coming up to a level of 27 billion Norwegian kroner in revenue. This is 27.6 billion this quarter, with 10 billion EBITDA, including the Kyivstar numbers. As you see on the graph on the left, we are having an organic growth of 4%, which is in line with the overall expectations for the year to come around the 6% level for the year. As you see on the margin number, we're at 36% on the EBITDA, the same as for the third quarter of 2007. Looking at the elements of reporting an organic growth in Telenor, you see that on this slide, on the left you have the revenue and to the right the EBITDA. You see that the reported growth this quarter is 4% and the organic is 4.1%. In addition, the EBITDA has a reported growth of 5.6%, but the organic is 6.9%. The dilemma in Telenor is that we are full of currencies and therefore the variety of those are very different. So if you look at the elements of this, you see that it is a wide variety of numbers. Look at Panin, you see it's a reported revenue growth of 7.5%, but the organic growth is about 0.3 negative. In addition, you see that the reported EBITDA growth is 9.9, but the organic is only 2.3 due to the fact of changes in currency. The same you can see of DTAC in Thailand. You have reported revenue growth of negative of 10.9, but the organic growth in Thailand is 2.4. Accordingly, the EBITDA has a negative of 8.8, but a plus 5.6. We hope that in understanding the numbers of Telnor, we hope that this table will assist you in understanding the development of the underlying and our organic growth compared to what we actually report in Norwegian kroner. Going to the CapEx levels, we see that the CapEx level actually reduces down to 14% relative to sales over the quarter. CapEx of 4 billion this quarter from a high of 4.8 if we exclude the licenses paid in the second quarter of 2008 of 1.5. You see from the bridge that coming from third quarter of 2007, we see the reduction is mainly in Asia, as we have predicted, that is coming down. Then it's a slight decrease in both Central Asia and Nordic, with a slight increase in broadcast, also as a result of the rollout of the terrestrial network for hiring. Going then to the operational cash flow, we see that we have a cash flow of operating cash flow of 6 billion Norwegian kroner this quarter. And in addition, you see that the development of the organic growth in Asia as well as in CEE, you see that the element of the bridge from the 4.2 in third quarter of 7 leads the increase in Asia of 1.2, the Central East Europe, mostly because of efficiency of CapEx spend relative to revenue more than the actual increase, so that the cash flow percentage in the Central East Europe region is now coming up to the 30% level and maybe a bit higher as a result of TSR's number being that high. Then to the numbers for the reported numbers for the quarter. We have a revenue of 23.8 billion Norwegian kroner, an EBITDA of 7.7 or just short of 7.7. We have some other items which is disclosed in our report. It's basically scrapping of an IT project delivered from IBM that we have to scrap that we didn't like. It's about 100 million. And then it's approximately in Sweden, restructuring costs and some other additions, about 100 million. And then another write-down on the contracts of the on Syncos, and a small write-down on the DTT in Finland of approximately 22 million kroners. So all in all, separate charges of about 300 million, leaving us at 7,346,000,000 of EBITDA. We have an associate there that is basically comprising of VimpelCom and QStar. QStar is approximately 900 million out of that. And then the net financial of 1.2, that is just a slight increase in our financial costs, together with translation differences of some of our hedging positions that is not we're not able to do hedge accounting for all of the balance sheet, and therefore we have a deduction there in the net financials of approximately just short of 400 million Norwegian kroner. That leaves us at a net income of almost 3 billion Norwegian kroner with an earnings per share of 1 kroner and 80 øre. If we take the earnings per shares on ongoing business from last year, it was 1 kroner and 86 øre. Going then to the net debt development, we started third quarter with 41.6 million in net debt. Then we had EBITDA of 7.4, interest paid, income taxes paid, and capex. And then we have some dividend received. and some currency effects and accruals that goes opposite ways, and thereby having a net effect of 0.8 and leaving us at a net debt of 39.3 billion at the end of third quarter. We've got numerous questions about our funding positions and debt positions during the quarter. This is the maturity profile of Telenor as such. The blue on the bottom is the group or the parent position that we have in our group companies own more than 90%. And then the gray ones is the one that is partly owned and separately financed outside the parent funding. So you see that the funding is that we have maturities of 2.5 billion Norwegian kroner due during 2008, 7.2 in 2009, and just short of 1 billion in 2010. To cover those relative to the turbulent financial markets, we have committed credit lines or backstop facilities of just about 20 billion Norwegian kroner. So relative to how we actually foresee the turbulence in the credit markets and the committed backstop facilities that we have already, we are very comfortable in our funding position going forward as such. Also relative to what that Fredrik said, that we anticipate our industry to be resilient, even though we're definitely not immune to the economic development. We do think that the position we have with the committed line, together with the position we have as an industry and also as a company, we actually feel comfortable on our credit position. That also includes India with the position that we are actually going to do a rights offering of 12 billion Norwegian kroners in the first quarter next year. Then my last line is to maintain the outlook for 2008 on reported revenue growth of around 3% as a result of the development in the currency market. That is slightly trending upwards from where it was last quarter. And the EBIT margin is in the same range of about 31%, and CapEx sales to be around 20% as a result of that we anticipate a slightly higher CapEx in the fourth quarter than we've seen in the third. A slight addition to that is also that the organic estimate that we have said to be around growth in revenue growth of around 6%. We actually maintain that as well, as Fredrik said. But the element is, as a result of the development and 4% growth in Q3, it might be on the low side, on the 6%, and not on the high side, but it's still definitely around the 6% level. So by that, I conclude my part of the third quarter presentation.
Thank you, Tom. We're now ready to take your questions. So. Fredrik, should please re-enter the podium. We'll start with one participating in the audience here present, and please wait for microphone. We have a question down here. And please also state your name and company.
Yes, hi. It's Martin Hall from Arctic Securities. In light of Telenor's own market cap now of, I don't know, somewhere below 70 billion, and if you take out the listed assets that you own, of the implied valuation of everything apart from the G&D tech is around 25 billion now. So with that in mind, could you say a little bit about it? What was your approach to valuation of Unitech? Is it an ETF valuation? I mean, how do you go about it?
Well, the valuation method that we actually have done on Unitech is basically the same valuation as we do in every investment. We look at the fundamental business case, how we can develop value, and then we try to evaluate the levels that we see. And it's also, of course, that it's a negotiation where the pricing level of that kind of asset will be as a greenfield operator. And we feel that having a value of an enterprise value of 1.1 million of that business prospect in India is a fair and good value of the long term relative to Telenor going forward.
And second question, follow-up. You said EBITDA break-even 3 years from startup, so I guess that would be 2012. Did you say when would then cash break-even? Was that 2015 or somewhere?
It's probably going to be plus minus 2 years in addition relative to that number or that time frame. So it's around 3 years on break-even on the EBITDA level. Mm-hmm. So you probably have to add on another 2 years plus minus on that to get cash break-even.
My final question. There's been very, very specific rumors about this Unitech acquisition now for 4 weeks. We've heard prices move in fairly weeks from maybe the Indian side. Why haven't you been out and kind of confirmed that you were actually in talks with them to kind of equalize the information out there?
Well, the reason why we haven't gone out and said anything is basically that we haven't been certain to actually complete the transaction until recently, even though we have been searching the market, not only with Unitech, but also with other players in the Indian market. We have been discussing with several, but yes, we agree and acknowledge that there have been rumors, but to us, the probability has been high enough. The only comment we actually made was that, yes, we are in India and looking at it. And that we did say, relative to the position of the probability of the deal, that wasn't clear until basically yesterday.
Thank you.
I have a question over here, please.
Hi, Assistant Torgerson, Carnegie. Obviously, a lot of focus on India today. I'm kind of intrigued in many ways, but if we look back at your business case moving into Pakistan and looking at how you evaluate the track record of that operation and you compare that to your assumptions going into India, is it more or less the same? Have there been any large deviations to your assumptions going into Pakistan? And obviously the last question would relate more to risk. What about the risk issue moving into India now versus the general assumptions back then?
Yeah, of course this is a diversified picture, and I'm not really sure whether comparisons between the two countries are that relevant to make. Because the risk factors on Pakistan are very much different from what they are on India. The situation where Pakistan is in is, of course, a very much more challenging situation than to compare it with the Indian sort of engine at work. The industry development in India has developed a lot more faster and then a lot stronger also in relationship to international relations than that of Pakistan. When we do our calculations on evaluating the risk factors, we could argue that we underestimated in 4 to 5 years back the situation that Pakistan presently finds themselves in. On the other hand, we do strongly believe that the telecommunications will sustain through both prosperous times as well as more difficult times. So basically, telecoms will be in need under any circumstances. We've seen this in many markets before, that the development of the business model on telecom basically takes a pause before it develops into a new layer. And we believe this will happen also in Pakistan after some while. To judge it by some few quarters is not relevant. If you then look at the risk factors in India, the competitive risk, the regulatory risk, the political risk, we do rate those quite differently from Pakistan, at least under the present conditions. However, all markets are giving certain surprises when it comes to regulatory things, and political priorities may change. Then we're back to the longer-term needs of the telecoms industry as such, being sustainable also over a period of time.
This will, of course, impact CapEx, as it will in Pakistan in these days. As I said, when we try to link OPEC and CapEx along with market development.
But just to add on to that, I do think that from a financial perspective, I do think that the most important difference between an India case and a Pakistan case is the power sharing possibility, which is substantial relative to capital allocation and being have the possibility to be a pan-Indian player without putting that much CapEx in up front relative to, and not and even the timing, the logistics in the actual rollout phase. And it's a prerogative that we actually get that deal relative to be able to actually do or actually close this deal as a whole. And that is a fundamental difference relative to what we actually saw in Pakistan.
To follow up, if I may, on the funding side. Given the parliamentary white paper stating that the Norwegian government will not drop below 54%, is it fair to say it's a formality based on your the comments you make in the report stating to they will attend based on certain...
The government's effect is there will, of course, be a number of formalities that has to be done through a parliamentary proposition. So I think that question should be directed to them as well. We see that as a technical type of condition.
Question, two rows behind.
You have been talking a bit about it already, but you are guiding for an accumulated capex of $2 billion for the first 3 years, whereas I believe Vodafone has guided for $2 billion of capex each year going forward in the Indian market. You mentioned that the tower sharing agreement will contribute to a moderate capex. However, we should probably also assume that your competition is doing the capex as efficient as possible. Could you provide some more color on your moderate capex expectations for the Indian market?
First of all, how the others are deploying their capex, that will be up to the others. I do anticipate that that figure also includes a 3G initiative. When we are looking at our initial steps, we're using our frequencies for the 900 band for voice, SMS, and then also edge, giving internet access on handhelds, basically. And this is our initial step up. We are anticipated that we will move into a tower sharing agreement, giving us access to a high number, very high number of towers, as well as also access to underlying backbone capacities, which means that, as I said, the capex figure will be significantly lower. The OPEX will be slightly higher under such a rental agreement. However, the power sharing principle basically gives benefits to the party that has built the towers, as well as to the power to the party connecting to the towers, which is a fundamental new change to our business model, basically. So we install our own equipment in the towers, and of course, do the front end investments in the network. So we believe that we shall be able to build necessary coverage the way we have thought of go to market with that figure that is in the estimates.
Any further questions from the audience? We have one question down here.
It's fine, it's Martin Hoffman. Do you have any retreat options at all until the deal is closed, or is it all finalized?
Should I take something else?
Can you change your mind?
No. There are some condition precedents, of course, and we're not expected to actually do those condition precedents finishing until well, approximately 4 weeks, maybe a bit later. But other than that, it's a fine deal. As long as the condition precedents are met, it's definitely a done deal. The most important element of that is not finalized in negotiations is the tower sharing agreement.
Any further questions? We have also received a number of questions on the internet from the ones participating there, and we won't have time to answer every question here, but we will get back to the unanswered question after this presentation. We'll have one question though. It's from Frank Moore at DNB Markets. He asked, there are 7 players in India now and 6 new licenses prior to the 3G being auctioned. How many players have you assumed when you ran the numbers?
Well, there won't be a full number, 7 plus 4, basically, in all circles. We have the presence of existing players strongly or weakly is very differentiated from circle to circle. So the number of players will be lower than sort of the thought maximum. However, how many there will be and how many there of an impact there will be in every circle is very, very difficult to say. We are putting trust in the fact that we have our model on how to go to market, how to link up with distribution, and how to differentiate our service offering up against the others. We are putting faith in that model gives ourselves the differentiating factor, building a perception around the telemedicine service offering that will have an impact.
Thank you. If there are no further questions here, we'll turn over to the ones participating on the phone.
Next, Mr. Patrick, J.P. Morgan. Go ahead, please.
Hi, it's Maurice Patrick from J.P. Morgan. A couple of questions. The first one relates to your CapEx guidance in India. Clearly there are 3G spectrum auctions coming up, and how much do you envisage that spectrum actually costing? The second question relates to funding of the rollout, and you've talked about doing a rights issue in the first quarter. Why would you not perhaps look to raise debt instead of that in order not to dilute existing shareholders? And just finally, with your shares on about 4 or 5 times earnings, why do you think it creates more value for shareholders to go into India rather than using that same cash to buy back your own shares? Thank you.
If I got your first question right, you asked about 3G spectrum, didn't you?
That's correct.
As for the 3G spectrum and the potential value of that, we have no speculations from our hand on that question. We are concentrating on the 2G business model, and I think I already said based on the 900 band, it's the 800 band, of course. But still, the 3G issue is not part of our comments as of today, meaning that we are reluctant on sort of throwing ourselves into an auction-like procedure on the 3G as we stand today.
Well, coming to the funding question, the element of looking at the rights issue instead of raising debt. One element is, of course, the challenge of raising debt in this type of market. But another thing is that as a result of the Indian investment being so front-loaded of negative cash flow, specifically in the first year, and getting access to all those base stations and rolling that out fairly quickly, that's going to pressure the operating cash flow so much that we actually felt that it would be unwise to adjust such a financial risk going into 2009 than that we ended up with the suggestion of doing a rights issue because of the rating implications that might be considered as a result of the negative cash flow coming out of an Indian investment. Going to the capital allocation question about doing or allocating to the investment of India compared to doing a buyback issue, it is of course a question of short-term financial returns relative to the long-term returns that we can see of an India case. The issue has been raised in the company. And we have looked at the elements of the long-term growth of Telenor and have evaluated the situation that the business case as such meets all the criteria for good economic growth as well as the industrial growth of Telenor. And thereby have come to the conclusion that the right thing to do now would be to consider the long-term growth of Telenor and not the immediate short-term relative to how you can price it into the financial market.
Thank you very much indeed.
Well, next, Mark James, Colin Stewart.
Hi, couple of questions, please. Firstly, is there not a danger that competitors may use 3G as a differentiator if you don't pursue a 3G license? Secondly, just following on from that earlier question, you're on an earnings yield of 22%. Can you just confirm that you know your long-term plans have a return on investment that's higher than that? And lastly, you know, what hurdle rate cost of capital did you use when evaluating the Indian move? Thank you.
The 3G as a differentiator, yes. Of course, that is a concern, you could argue. However, the customer segments, the market segments in India in the first years at least, will probably be not as inclined to meet such a differentiated service offering at any size. If we see how this has been done in the Scandinavian countries, it's only after quite some time that the 3G service offering has proved to really be differentiated for broader parts of the marketplace. We use it as a frequency as a capacity enhancer, more or less, in the first years.
Well, going back to whether your return calculation is right or not, I cannot elaborate more than I did in the last question. The element is that it has been evaluated whether the returns on the buyback relative to the long-term industrial development of Telenor, considering the rates of return that we actually have as a benchmark and had as a benchmark for the last at least 4 or 5 years are met. And therefore, we have done the decision of allocating the resources to India.
And just putting your share price to one side, then what cost of capital have you used when evaluating the Indian acquisition?
As always, we're not stating what elements of weighted average cost of capital and capital allocate or capital requirements we're actually using. The only thing I can say is that we've done the same calculations. We've done the market-wise calculations on the returns, put on our own evaluations on the returns of India as such as a DCF model, and together with the level of nominal internal rate of return that they have as a standard template relative to achieve more than. And both of them are met in this investment as in any other investments we've done previously. But we're not stating the level of returns that we put into the model.
Thank you.
Next, Ulrich Lawson, the guest McLeinbus. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Three questions from my side, please. First, in India, on the network sharing, the tower sharing agreement, I was wondering how you can match the two sides of saying, on the one hand, network sharing, tower sharing is the key advantage compared, for example, to Pakistan. And on the other hand, you say, but a quality differentiation, network quality is sort of the key, one of the key value propositions. I mean, how does that match? That was my first question. The second question, coming back to this cost of capital issue, maybe with a different angle, I understand you don't want to sort of really detailed how you calculate this, but my question would be, did the fact that the share price is trading where it is today play any role in your evaluation of the Indian case, given that it is financed with share capital at current levels? So did that play any role at all in the whole calculation? And my third question, if I may, what is the practical implications of the asset freeze by the Omsk court on the Vimpelcom shares? I understand you protest that, I fully understood, but what is the practical impact? Are there any issues with secured loans or anything of that sort? I was just wondering. Thank you.
Yeah, let me begin on the power sharing principles. You're right in the fact that power is used by us, not necessarily gives better quality initially compared to power is used by another. On the other hand, we do see that traffic volumes in certain areas are being hampered from all existing players because of lack of frequencies, basically, to handle the traffic growth. More or less a little bit of the same that we experienced in Bangladesh, where we are the market leader in Grameenphone, in the Dhaka area, which now will be compensated by the fact that we will increase the frequencies in play in that country. So that is one area of one quality parameter that has to be taken into your consideration. Then we haven't said that we will not deploy any of our own towers. But in volumes, we have access to new towers, existing towers, which basically will give us an early rollout when it comes to coverage, which we have not seen before. And this is the key for how we want to start up, because we both take down the CapEx level significantly, as well as increase the speed in rollout, so that we can participate in market growth as early as possible in 2009.
John? Well, coming to whether to the capital allocation discussion again, and whether buyback were played a role in evaluating the cost of capital. Of course, it played a role in the sense that it was evaluated during the process and were considered towards a standard capital allocation issue relative to returns for the company as well as for the shareholders. And basically, that was evaluated. But the element is that it didn't play any more role, that it was not decided. It was decided upon going into India. Coming to the arrest of the Vimpelcom shares, we don't see any immediate implications. There are, of course, when there are seizure or arrest in assets, some of our loan agreements have some vague language relative to whether or not what implication that might arise. We have evaluated that position and found out that this is not material at this stage, and we have not seen that this will have any implication as of now.
And let me add that under the appeal, we are anticipating that this arrest will be taken down.
Thank you.
We have a lot of people on the phone wanting to ask questions today, so I would ask you please to limit the number of questions from each. We'll have the next question now, please.
Next, Hotel, Goldman Sachs. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hello, it's James Hotel from Goldman. I'll be quick on my questions. Number one, in India, what is the process to get the 2G spectrum for the residual 9 circles? Is there any risk you don't, or is that just a formality? Secondly, are you absolutely committed to a 2G-only strategy and therefore not look to bid in the auctions at all for 3G? Or might you keep an eye on what levels they're going for and revise plans accordingly if it looks like there is value in 3G spectrum? And then on Pakistan, your margins obviously dropped to 11%, I think it was, in the third quarter. It doesn't feel like the turmoil in Pakistan is over. Can you give us any sense of where that leaves you for thinking about the run rate for margins in Pakistan for 2009?
As for spectrum in the residual circles, I wouldn't go as far as saying it's only formalities. But we do anticipate that the work that has been done by our partner in this respect will also earn us frequency in the remaining circles. If so, do not happen, there is a compensation mechanism in the documentation between ourselves. 2G only, keep an eye on.
In the 13 spectrums we have already, it's covering approximately about 860 million people out of the 1.140 million people there already. So the 13 circles already in hand actually covers 850 million people in India.
As for 2G only versus having an eye on 3G, of course, we will have an eye on 3G, and it's not expected that a 3G license process will have a national approach only. It will have a circle approach, which will mean that probably operators are becoming selective on how to approach the 3G spectrum issue. As for Pakistan, what can we expect? For the time being, I think the environment in Pakistan is so that all kinds of expansionary activities have come to a halt. FDI has been significantly reduced or even withdrawn. A lot of people participating in Pakistan business industry has become more mobile, running their things from abroad. This has to come through a period where things will normalize, we hope. We do anticipate that the traffic pattern will increase and that there will be new customers to come in towards the end of this year compared to what happened in third quarter. But to expect that it will be a sudden swing back on what we've seen, that is too strong. So we will reduce the speed and momentum in how we build capacities in our organization in Pakistan, as probably will happen in, among the other players as well.
Just a quick follow-up, I don't know if I'm still on the line, but in the event that you do pick up some 3G spectrum in some circles, does that change the sort of business plan that you outlined for India? I could add a bit more to CapEx. Might it change EBITDA break-even, etc.?
As we said in when we presented India, 3G is not part of the figures that we have shown you today. So if there is a 3G, then that is an additional business proposition.
Thank you.
Next, Peter Linson, Chevalier, go ahead, please.
Peter Linson from Chevalier, I'll try and be brief. Firstly, the 12 billion rights issue, would that cover the funding needs in Unitech Wireless until it becomes cash flow break-even, or do you see yourself adding debt in order to fund that that rollout in India? Second question, has there been any new movements in your discussions with Alpha, any new signs that Alpha may be changing their position vis-a-vis a resolution to your various disputes in Kyrgyzstan and Bimbelcom? And certainly your comments on mobile broadband intake in Norway being strong while DSL seems to be flattening off, is that simply a function of the DSL market maturing, or do you see some cannibalization of what we call it of mobile, sorry, on fixed on behalf of mobile? Thank you.
On the 12 billion rights issue, no, that did not cover the negative cash flow in Unitech until they're going to be cash flow break-even. As we said during the first question, we said that it's going to be a $2 billion capex within the first 3 years, and we see that we're going to be, not going to be cash neutral or cash balanced until at least 2 years after that. It's the fact that no, it's not going to cover that, but relative to the solidity of Telenor, even though there is a for the financing, it's a challenge relative to the negative cash flow coming in from India at the beginning of the project. We feel that Telenor is solid enough to actually be able to handle that negative cash flow in the years to come from our ordinary course of operational free cash flow.
Then to clarify, when you said movements on the outer relationship, what were you thinking about? Were you thinking about talks?
Simply whether there's been any new sort of any change in asset position vis-a-vis various market speculations in your general ongoing discussions, which you've been telling us you have sort of on an ad hoc basis.
There has been no talks principally with Alfa Altimo people for quite some time on a negotiated solution. There is no such element going on for the time being. However, during the weekend, we made a suggestion to Mikko Friedman on our willingness to participate with resolving the Kyivstar issue by buying their stake for cash, and that was not of the interest to him. As for the last question of yours, the balance between mobile broadband and DSL, is the DSL market maturing in Norway? You might say so. If we remember back to the ISDN years, the ISDN population of customers reached slightly below 900,000, 872,000, I seem to remember. Whereas in the DSL market, the flattening level for DSL for households might be at a slightly lower, slightly higher level, around 950 to a million or so. But then you have other technologies, of course. You have cable, and you have the fiber coming in. So where are these basically maturing levels are? All in all, is a bit difficult to say. Whether mobile broadband basically is cannibalizing DSL, I'm not really sure for that as of yet. We could argue, though, that people in having a mobile way of living basically could think that their mobile office is to their convenience. Therefore, you don't need. And, of course, that relates to single persons, grown-up adults, or on the move. But when it comes to the family structures, I think we're solidly with fixed connection.
Many thanks.
Next on the Svanberg, RAM. Go ahead, please.
Hello, I'm Svanberg from RAM. I wonder if you can explain what minority shareholders can say and what can say ahead of the rights issue. What type of majority is required to vote through the rights issue? Is it just 50% or is it a qualified majority? And what other ways are you going to take in the views of minority shareholders ahead of this rights issue? Thanks.
Well, the milestones of the rights issue is that basically the board has to decide on the terms. But in addition to that, we have a majority shareholder who is the government who actually needs to have their approval in place. Their approval part is actually have to go through the Parliament of Norway, and therefore that is considered to take about approximately 2 to 2.5, maybe 3 months. In parallel to that, we're going to work on our on the rights issue, and then the board at the end of that phase is going to make a decision on the terms and the prospectus as such, and then we're going to call to a general assembly in sometime first quarter 2009. And probably going to complete that rights issue during 2009 as such. So the major reason for not going more aggressively towards the rights issue is, of course, that our major shareholders, actually need their authority to actually be a part of that. Even though, of course, as you have seen, they have made the conditions that it has to be, of course, done on marketable terms. That is basically the milestones as such, and therefore it's going to be ample time for us to actually discuss with all the shareholders relative to the process going forward and also the elements that has to be contained in such an issue.
Is it enough with the 50% acceptance, is it enough that the government accepts, or do you need a qualified majority, so you need other shareholders on the boat also?
Or it has to be two-thirds of the shareholders that attend the General Assembly.
So basically you need some other shareholders to say yes also, providing that people show up.
Depending on how much that, how many shareholders show up, yes.
Okay, given another question from me, given that Pakistan is still EBIT or operating profit negative, and you've been there for 4 years or something like that, and it's quite some way to go before you have a decent return on the capital you invested there. Can you once again explain how this can be a better deal than buying back Telenor shares at 4.5 times earnings?
Actually, as I said, there's just so many ways I can answer that question. So no, I cannot give you more elaborations about what kind of decisions and what kind of elements that have gone into this, because there are any more. So the element is that basically we cannot, relative to comparing it with the third quarter results of Pakistan, which is basically sort of a slight step back relative to the part that we actually see going forward. Our anticipation on Pakistan is still on the long-term level that we're going to come up to a much higher margin and a revenue base. So the element of comparing it to just third quarter of Pakistan wouldn't be reasonable relative to the long-term play.
Okay, thank you.
Next, Bengt Malerud, Handelsbanken. Go ahead, please.
Well, thank you, Bengt Malerud, Handelsbanken. Just, how is your thinking here, the impact of your acquisition in India on your opportunities when it comes to strike a deal with Alpha regarding taking over Kyivstar and potentially make a deal around Vimpelcom? And then secondly, when it comes to your subscriber estimates in your business plan there for the new operation in India, what kind of expectations should they have regarding subscribers by the end of 2010 and also for the ARPU level there that will be helpful in modeling this business? Yeah.
We do have the necessary ability to handle any solution that might come, as we've had before, as we stated before, and as we will state, we are having those that ability in place. Having seen values develop in the way we have seen over the last half year, we are probably more looking at deals starting on relative valuations rather on cash being involved. I didn't quite get the second question.
Subscribers in India are relative. As we said in the presentation, we are looking at higher than 8% market share in the long run. And basically then it's just an anticipation on how the actual penetration growth is going. We have not given out our views on the penetration growth and when that is coming, but the element is that we're looking at, in the long term, higher than 8% of the market share of the thing cost.
If I may follow up there, I mean, you've been talking about the network, etc., but when it comes to the marketing side and what kind of ambition do you have there, from brand, etc., in order to, would you say you're competitive in this crowded Indian market?
We have the brand decision is not yet taken. The visible brand as such.
And when it comes to the competitive advantage that you see there in India competing with up-to-town competitors.
But then we're back to the whole story as such. Then we're back to the competencies that we have in Telenor, being the one that really have been handling greenfield markets over the years the way we have. That would be sort of a repetition of my presentation to run that once more.
Okay, please.
Next, Stefan Peterson, Nordea, go ahead, please.
Yes, hello. Coming back here to Pakistan, where the current development doesn't look encouraging. What will you do now short term to lift margins back towards the 20% level? And if I may follow, at the Capital Markets Day, you guided for market share above 25% and EBITDA margin in mid-30s by 2010 to 2011 in Pakistan. Do you believe that you will have to revise these figures on the back of this report? And finally, there is a clear slowdown in both Pakistan and Bangladesh, and in both these countries there are six operators. Have you seen that this slowdown in market growth could lead to consolidation?
I think it's too early to say that we will revise sort of the longer term perspective on the Pakistan operation. However, we will be looking at the speed at which we add capacity costs in Pakistan because of this development. And we will also, of course, take a look on the CapEx level going forward in light of, at least short term, a different profile on the customer number as well as traffic volumes. Whether these conditions will lead to consolidations, I do think that such conditions will raise that question up some notches. Not only by us, but also by others. So maybe, yes, this will lead to a discussion on that to happen in the near future.
Okay, thank you.
Please. Next question, please.
Next, Mr. Bluestone, Merrill Lynch. Go ahead, please.
Hi there, Jacob Bluestone from Merrill Lynch. Three pretty quick questions. Firstly, can you talk a little bit about what sort of mechanisms you've put in place in case the relationship with Unitech deteriorates? Obviously, you've had quite a few difficulties with some of your other partners and your other businesses. So are there any put or call options or any specific divorce clauses you can clarify? Secondly, you've given guidance for $2 billion in CapEx for the first 3 years and EBITDA break-even within 3 years. But I was just wondering, could you also guide us what will be the cumulative operating losses be in the first 3 years? So how much EBIT losses will there be until you reach break-even? And then finally, can you just talk a little bit about, on the rights issue, what happens if there's insufficient take-up? Does the legislation being put forward, will that allow the government to take up more than its fair share? Thanks.
Let me start on the general side as to partner conflict. When you embark on a partnership in the way that we've done with Unitech and crossing over the threshold together, as we've done this night, then challenges in partnership is probably not the highest element to discuss. But yes, there are conflict resolution mechanisms in the paperwork around this documentation, as it is in any documentation. So, John, maybe you can elaborate on a little bit on that, as well as the other part.
Oh, we do have the traditional mechanisms, and we have also used our extensive experience for the last couple of years in actually putting them into play. So I do think that, yes, we do have drags and tags, and we have the necessary dilution mechanisms relative to funding requirements. But the basic and the major part of this is that we do have a firm majority at the board with the necessary decision powers at the board level, and we do have a firm definition of the managing director as well as the management. So I do think that the technical mechanisms, we are confident that those are in place relative to have difference of opinion on strategic directions or any details as such. But I do think it also will be sufficient enough to actually run the company as a head shareholder with ample authorities, both in the General Assembly as well as in the board as well as the management.
Sorry to brush a little bit on this, but I mean, given how important the conflicts have been, Kyivstar, Vimpelcom, and in other markets as well, I mean, are these arbitration proceedings or what are they?
Well, there's no any sort of shotgun mechanisms or any options like that, but there are enough mechanisms for us to actually make sure that we can run the industrial strategic agenda and also control in event other owners coming into the company as such, also having put elements of collateralization and anything else of the assets as such. So I do think it's not a stop for collateralization, but it's, we have a view and say on that element. So I do think that we're taking into consideration of who's going to sit in the driving seat in both the operational and strategic questions, as well as coming to policies on financial aspects. I do think that is well covered.
Okay, the operating losses in years 1 through 3?
As a result of being a bit vague, as well as on the distribution and other elements, because that comes down to the core strategy on how we're going to roll out and how quick we're going to roll out, we, at this point in time, we're not ready to do that. I do think that relative to the cash flow element, you probably will be able to calculate that as a result of the how much effect of operating cash flow dilution it will have. So in essence, you have enough numbers to actually generally understand the size, but we wouldn't come out with an exact number on the accumulated deficit of EBITDA the first 3 years at this point.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Next, Chris Whitehouse, T. Rowe Price, go ahead, please.
Yes, just following up on the previous question, if in fact you believe you've given us generally enough information to get a rough idea of sunspots, then please do, would you share that rough idea with us so we can get a better idea of the dilution to earnings, please?
Oh, well, as I said, when you have the capex and the dilution on the cash flow, you basically have the two elements prior to the EBITDA. So in that, in essence, you have the basic the numbers of the accumulated numbers to 2003.
Next question, please.
Next, Sumit Datta, New Street Research. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Sumit Datta at New Street. And just one question at this stage, please. You're in the context of India, I guess. So sorry to go back to India, but you're guiding in principle to a sort of capex-light approach, but EBITDA margins, which are not, you know, too far off the existing industrial players like Bharti, I'm struggling to reconcile those two things. Maybe you could help me understand a little bit about the network sharing, the tower sharing implications for your OPEX, because I would have thought they would be higher than those longer-term margins imply. Thank you.
The assumption we have on the tower sharing is that the element of, if you compare it with setting up your own ground-based tower, it's actually going to reduce the capex in the area of 70 to 75%. On a building or a tower put up on the building, it's probably going to reduce it between 50 to 60%. So that is sort of the range and the element of the effect of a tower sharing relative to capex. When it comes to operational costs, it is actually a fairly marginal increase in opex as a result of the tower sharing, because you are able to actually be much more efficient on all the other supplies that you actually need to have in a base station like that. So it's actually only going to add on about 5 to 10% on the actual cost, the OPEX cost as such. So the element is that you reduce the CAPEX substantially and the OPEX is just marginally increased.
And so there are no sort of wholesale payments which you make which will pass through the P&L to the operator with the towers then?
Well,
or if they are, they add up to about 5%.
Yes, we're under negotiation, but at this point in time, that's the best we can do, basically.
Okay, thanks.
Next, Dimovic, Exane. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Good morning. Sorry to come back again on the question about a big funding for the Indian venture, just to be able to fully reconcile all the indications you've provided on the free cash flow, operating free cash flow dilution for the group in 2009. If you can please provide your assumptions for CapEx to sales level on the core business of Telenor in 2009, that could be helpful, please. That's my first question. The second one is, could you consider selling other assets to fund the expansion in growth? And finally, how much would be the penalty if in the voting process of shareholders you don't get the two-thirds majority vote allowing you to go for India? Thank you.
Well, coming to the CapEx, we basically now said that the CapEx to sales ratio coming into 2009 is going to be in the high 20s. If we're at the startup phase, that is based on basically a general understanding on where Telenor is actually having their revenue, and therefore you will get a fairly accurate number on the CapEx going into 2009. We have also said that in 2010 it's going to be on the lower 20s, meaning that it's going basically down the 6-7 percentage points during that period of time. I do think relative to the consensus estimate on 2009 and 2010 of Telenor, that would give you the necessary numbers that you really need for CapEx spending going forward. And if you add that up with the $2 billion in dollars over the next 3 years, I do think that you're going to have a fairly accurate estimate relative to how that funding is going to roll out.
As to your comment on the possibility of selling other assets, how we
so when Frederick is out of battery, we'll go to the voting power. As I said, it's the attendance at the General Assembly that's going to vote for the capital increase. The capital increase has a two-third majority, and in case the General Assembly do not approve the conditions as such, it has to go back to the board, and we have to reevaluate the possibilities of finding the necessary funding to actually keep going on that term. The element is that we have not put in a financing condition on this agreement as such, so we just have to solve the situation, and thereby basically coming back to the question that Frederick started on, that we need to find the funding as well as looking at the possibilities of selling assets.
Well, then you have confirmed my statement.
Okay, we have one more question from...
Last question, Malcolm, Arete Research. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. Two questions, please. First of all, just on the dividend policy, which you've maintained, can I just confirm that the underlying operating profits that you'll be measuring the dividend against will include the dilution from India for the next 3 years? So we assume basically lower underlying profits, lower dividend. And secondly, just funding the Indian venture. Can you just outline the financial position of your partner in India and how I assume that the rollout will be funded on a proportionate basis by the two partners, you know, what cash position there and how they'll fund their investment. Thank you very much.
When it comes to your assumptions on the dilution as a result of the negative EBITDA effects of India, yes, that is going to affect the underlying operating profit that we actually do the estimate between 40 to 60% on. So that is correct. That's going to be a diluting factor. Coming to the funding in India, it's of course based on that the capital injection that we are about to do. In addition to that, we assume some project financing as a result of the Indian banks possibility, as well as are assumed that project financing will be possible to some extent. After that, it is of course a pro-rata payment of capital injection from each partner, and we have assumed that they will be able to put up their part of the next phase after the project financing. And that, if in case that happens, don't happen, we have the necessary mechanisms in place to actually be able to solve that issue either on our own or funding others that might assist us in doing that. So actually I feel comfortable that if in case they are not able or willing to actually come with the necessary funds, we are able to actually find solutions either ourselves or together with others that will make it possible for us to not have the pressure on the cash flow that we would not like to see if in case it happens.
Okay, and then does that include a greater equity stake? Are you allowed to take a bigger equity stake in this venture? I guess not. I mean,
that is among the possibilities, but that's not the only one.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, and that will conclude the Q&A session. Thank you all for participating this morning.